The reading this morning is the poem that I sent out to you by email in the last blizzard. I had intended to spend a month thinking about this poem with you. I started to do a service about this poem, I think, in October, and then thought, oh, I'm going to save it for February when the theme is love and we'll have a whole month. So we'll do one Sunday at it anyway. My friend Michael and I are walking home arguing about the movie. He says that he believes a person can love someone and still be able to murder that person. And I say, no, that's not love. That's attachment. And Michael says, no, that's love. You can love someone and then come to a day when you're forced to think, it's him or me. And think, me, and kill him. And I say, then it's not love anymore. And Michael says, it was love up until then, though. And I say, maybe we mean different things by the same word. And Michael says, humans are complicated. Love can exist even in the murderous heart. And I say, what he might mean by love is desire. Love is not a feeling, I say. And Michael says, then what is it? We're walking along West 16th Street, a clear, unclouded night, and I hear my voice repeating what I used to say to my husband. Love is action, I used to say to him. Simone Weil says that when you really love someone, you're able to look at them and want to eat them and not eat them. She's one of the great philosophers. Janis Joplin says, take another little piece of my heart now, baby. And Meister Eckhart says that as long as we love images, we are doomed to live in purgatory. Michael and I stand on the corner of 6th Avenue saying goodnight. I can't drink enough of the tangerine spritzer that I have just bought. Again and again, I bring the cold can to my mouth and suck the stuff from the hole the flip top made. What are you doing tomorrow? Michael says. But I think that he is saying, you are too strict. You are a nun. And then I think, do I love Michael enough to allow him to think these things of me, even if he is not thinking them? Above Manhattan, the moon wanes, and the sky turns clearer and colder. Although the days after the solstice have started to lengthen, we both know the winter has only begun. Since my son was born 2 years and 6 days ago, it has been a love fest in our house. My husband and I have been totally in love from the first moment. And I know that doesn't happen for all parents. And it's really okay if it doesn't. But in our house, we were completely in love immediately. And he has loved us from those first moments, too. And if anyone can come close to the over-the-top smittenness that John and I exhibit on a regular basis, it is the grandparents. Oh, my goodness. We only went out because we're there all the time. And by smitten, I mean deeply moved. Made vulnerable and tender, wanting only the best for this little boy and for everyone we see when we're with him. Babies have that stunning combination of fragility and vulnerability and possibility that cracks us open. And so I have had this thought continuously since this little boy was born. Why don't we feel this way about people all the time? Why aren't we this vulnerable and generous and stunned by each other all the time? I know there are a million answers to that, and I have done sermons on some of those answers, but I keep coming back to that question. And in our tradition, we say that the questions are sometimes just as important as any answer you might have. And I am keenly aware that not all babies in the world get this kind of reception, that they're just not born into circumstances where that works out. And even people who do get welcomed by a chorus of love have heartbreaks too young. Losses and confusions come to even the very young. And then there are all of the hurts circulating in the world that you heard on the news in the past 24 hours, or the 24 hours before that. I know there are the answers for why we don't feel stunned by everyone all the time. And let me read you a few more words of Marie Howe. This is from an interview in 1997, about 10 years before she wrote the poem that I just read to you. She says, "It takes so much courage to love, doesn't it? Maybe it's always been difficult, but in this age and in this culture, capitalism doesn't want love. It wants us to buy and eat a culture that spends its money on, well, on defense systems, where so many of our communities are lonely and false, shattered and dangerous, and children's hearts are broken very early. Remember when the Surgeon General said the most pressing medical problem in American culture was addiction? Is addiction thwarted love, giving up on the hope of human connection?" These are still Marie Howe's words. "The fierce, real, clear energy of actual love, intentional defenselessness, the unromantic daily love of changing a grown man's diapers or moving someone's car on street cleaning day so that they can sleep. This daily love keeps many of us alive. To act in this world without irony or condescension seems to me to be an act of great courage. The long journey from head to heart." She says three things in that interview that she's clearly still working on a decade later when she wrote that poem. Her awareness that love is a courageous act, an act of resistance. And her clarity that love is action. And our tendency to trade love for attachments. In her interview, she's talking about addiction, and I think that addiction and attachment can probably be used interchangeably in many places. I agree with Marie Howe, or with the voice in her poem, that love or connection or relationship that turns violent or demanding is not love, that it is, in fact, attachment. Attachment to having things go a certain way, to having the other person be or not be something. And it is stunning how many of our relationships have a fair amount of attachment in them. And I don't mean that in the affectionate way. I mean that in the sense of wanting something that's not necessarily ours to want in that relationship. Old feelings from early life attached to new people, and we don't even know how they're pulling on us. Old longings are either fulfilled or unfulfilled. If we are lucky, we have moments, maybe whole afternoons, when we love the people we are with just as they are. However they are, without wanting them to do something differently or not do something or be something. Do I love him enough to allow him to think these things of me, even if he's not thinking them? Let him be in his own mind and not try to change it. Allow him to be mad or hurt or just in his own thoughts without trying to stop it. That is the first step of reconnecting with each other. To just let each being be and stay with them. Which is why she quotes Meister Eckhart, "As long as we love images, we are doomed to live in purgatory." The image of who we want to be, or the image of who we want to appear to be, the image of who we want the other person to be, all of these keep us from peace and from deep connection. And then as I wrote to you last week, a number of people said, "No, I think she's got that line all wrong. It's not about loving the other person enough to let them think what they want to think. It's about, do I love myself enough to let them think what they're going to think?" Which is also true. Allowing other people to even think poorly of us and be settled enough in our own minds can be a revolutionary act as well. And that's why we do the loving kindness meditation here periodically, holding ourselves in loving kindness first, so that we can meet the world with our own actual steady love. Love that is ours and not something that we're pretending. Not politeness or deference or even niceness, but deeply seated loving kindness. And of course, in the poem, it appears that Michael is not, in fact, thinking a thing about his friend in that moment. He's thinking about tomorrow. Lost in his own thoughts as much as she is lost in hers. Which is where we come back to the claim that love is action. She can express her love for him by letting him be however he is, judging or not, lost in his thoughts or not. And certainly a number of you emailed me back last week saying that you thought that love is action. And our children seem to think that that is true. I think of Cornel West's line, "Never forget, justice is what love looks like in public." Justice is what love looks like in public. In the next few weeks, the children are thinking about chocolate as a way to think about how we express love. And, of course, you heard some of their questions. Why do we give each other chocolate on Valentine's Day? Which is, why is this the token of affection? Why is this how we show each other that we're amazed by each other? And then they're going to learn about, to shorten several weeks of reflection for you, fair trade chocolate and what it means to have our chocolate be loving all the way back to the very source. So What we learn in that is that the line between private and public is disappearing. In fact, it was probably never there. We've just come to see that it was never there. Because if we find out that some of our most private choices, like sneaking a bite of chocolate in the kitchen before dinner, if that moment is connected to justice by way of making sure that everyone who helped make that chocolate has been treated fairly and therefore loved in that public sense, then even our most intimate decisions are connected to justice in the world. And love starts with our youngest selves and goes out and out and out. And it is in many ways that same love that we keep trying to extend, that love that amazes us and startles us when we meet a baby. So when you go out for social hour, you will find that there are a number of love note stations waiting for you. And there are many ways to put love into action, and writing a love note to someone is one of the ways to do it. We had originally envisioned this as a way to reclaim Valentine's Day, because Valentine's Day was originally a much broader celebration of love for each other, not just Cupid's love form of love. And in fact, I've learned that in some folk traditions, St. Valentine was a bringer of spring. So we're having a slightly delayed Valentine's Day here, and may he be a bringer of spring. So go back and write some love notes in that oldest, broadest form of love. Write them to people here in this congregation if you want to. And if you do that, just fold your note over and write the person's name, as much of their name as you know, on the back of the note, and it will get delivered by our Fuse delivery service over the next few weeks, which means you have to wear your name tags so that you can receive your love mail. And if you have a broader note, or a note for someone and you don't even know their name, those will be delightful ones to send. We'll hang them up in the parish hall next week so that they can be read and delivered that way. So I invite you to do some simple things this morning, to step into that revolutionary kind of love that Marie Howe invites us into, challenges us to live into. Let's make a pile of love notes for each other that is as high as the snowdrifts. That is my love challenge for you for these last days of this February month of snow and love.